Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. Thanks for joining us. I am Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante, live on YouTube, streaming every Monday, Thursday, 2 o'clock Eastern. And guess what? That's what time it is now. Unless you're listening to us on all podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Although I have learned that Google Podcasts is shutting down.
Gone.
Soon. So I guess I don't have to say that. And I won't say that because I've never been to Google Podcasts, which is probably one of the reasons it's being shut down. Because what is it? And how do you get podcasts from it? Oh, well. Goodbye. Bye-bye. The New York Yankees have played another several days of spring training baseball. Spring training baseball after game one of spring training is kind of just an injury risk, an unnecessary time waster before the regular season begins. Very fun to attend. Kind of worrisome and nerve-wracking to sit through and catalog and follow and make sure that nothing bad happens to your team. Because the first game, you're like, oh my God. The rites of spring, rebirth, renewal. Anthony Volpe has got a new swing. And then, like, game three, you're like, all right, just get through it healthy. Like, I do not care. Like, wrap Juan Soto in bubble wrap right now. He is ready for the regular season. Don't need to see anymore. He's only playing so that he can get those reps in and sell tickets. But enough is enough. He looks great. That is to say, spring training performance can't necessarily dictate readiness, ability to participate when the regular season begins. Just because somebody has an 0.93 ERA in spring training does not mean that they are going to challenge Clay Holmes for the closer role. But when you see somebody do something in spring training that proves they can still physically do that thing, which you were worried about, or when you see a wave of promising pitchers show off their stuff in spring training, it does help answer some questions about the roster's readiness and certain players' ability to, again, fulfill those obligations. So the Yankees, forget the performance, have already answered a few lingering questions we had opening this season. There is, however, one big one that has only gotten more confusing. We will talk about that, as well as, yes, Gerrit Cole, Daniel Vogelbach, home run shot that had our friends in Toronto whizzing in their pantaloons over the fact that they're in Gerrit Cole's head despite mustering one run off him in 28 and a third innings last year in games that actually mattered. That's 28 and a third innings of regular season baseball last year, in which they scored one run. That is just over three full games. So that is just under 0.33 runs a game, nine inning game, which is, again, not good enough. You're not going to win many games scoring a third of a run. There are a couple. You'll win a shutout if you score a third of a run, but most of them not going to happen. So we'll obviously talk about that as well. Thank you for joining us. Thomas Carinante, thank you for joining me. Why don't you hit everybody with a sponsor offer before we get rolling?
Yep, everybody except Blue Jays fans, this offer's for you. If you haven't signed up for DraftKings Sportsbook yet, please make sure to get your first bet on them. New customers will get a second chance bet, also in the biz, known as a risk-free bet, up to $1,000 when signing up with our promo code YanksGoYard. That means if your first bet loses, you will get your full wager returned as a bonus bet, again, up to $1,000. It's a lot of money, so you can really have yourself a good time if you're feeling strong about one of the bets you have in the chamber. So signing up with our code YanksGoYard not only covers your first bet, but it gets you access to DraftKings daily rewards and other profit boosts. Very fun. They plop them right in your folder, your rewards tab, whatever it is, and you can check them off the list every day. Betting journey, if you will. So if you're looking to join DraftKings, please download the app and register with our promo code YanksGoYard and make sure that first bet is covered. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Very important. Check the episode descriptions. Check the episode description. There is not multiple descriptions. There is just one description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Thank you very much. God, I hate Blue Jays fans. But yeah, spring training, Yankee stuff. That's where we're going to start because this is our team. And we got to talk about our team and not other people who are stupid. So what do we got here? Yankee spring humming along. We'll get to the concerns in a minute, but, we do have some good developments. Juan Soto hitting the shit out of the ball. Some prospects turning some heads. Anthony Rizzo healthy back. I don't know. That would be exciting, right?
Well, that's my number one question we've answered, because we haven't answered, is Anthony Rizzo going to be healthy for the regular season? Or what does Anthony Rizzo's final stat line look like or anything like that? But for those of us who just wanted to get a look at Anthony Rizzo and be like, after last season, is it even still in there?
Yeah.
Right? Like, we obviously know Anthony Rizzo got concussed at some point last year and lost his way and an all-star season went off the rails and all that good stuff. By good stuff, I mean horrible stuff. But I think a lot of people forget just how much of the season was eaten by that undiagnosed concussion, enough to make you write Rizzo off. And if you wanted to before this season, we would have understood that. I wasn't thinking about him as a major piece of this team's potential equation. And he wasn't quite Giancarlo Stanton level for me because I assumed he would have bounced back a little bit. But Justin Morneau, Joe Mauer, there are plenty of players who've been rattled by concussion issues and just never returned to displaying anything close to the skill set they had previously. So forgive me for thinking that Rizzo playing on a concussion for 2 months might have made that even worse. Because it's not like he got concussed, took a break, came back, found his footing a little bit, but you don't know. He played through it, which only makes things worse typically. So I didn't know what we were going to see. I didn't know if he was still going to have that in him, but two homers, including a grand slam on Friday night, and he took a walk in three plate appearances. Again, throw it out the window that he's hitting 444 with a 1.908, slugging or whatever. That's fantastic. That's like a 7 at-bat small sample. That is not going to – Rizzo's going to set a new average record. No, he's not. He's not going to hit 430 this season. but I didn't know if he still had the timing mechanism in his swing and the literal ability to display that type of power and that type of patience and recognize pitching. I don't care who the pitcher is, just the ability to recognize pitching in general and be able to launch. The Toronto Blue Jays did not exactly throw – it wasn't Kevin Gausman. It wasn't Alek Manoah. If it was Manoah, maybe he would have hit it even further. But on Friday night, they didn't throw their best and brightest at him, but it's a major league pitcher, and he was able to display that he was able to still wait on the ball and deposit grand slam and another long solo home run. So for me, we didn't answer the question of what Rizzo's season looks like, but we did answer the question of, does Anthony Rizzo still have the ability to put a hurt on a baseball and to time up his swing and be able to get that done? And that was answered in the affirmative on Friday night. And then again, over the weekend, he had another good game. So the more good games, the better. But once we've seen enough, I'm probably good to bubble wrap him until opening day as well. Just because, again, only bad things can occur when a player just uses a lot of reps on meaningless games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the biggest takeaway for me, too. We saw last year 2 months of not hitting anybody or anything. And I did write Rizzo off. I wrote Rizzo off for a number of reasons. One, because the injury was labeled cognitive impairment, which sounds much worse than a concussion. So you'd have to at least guess, educated guess, that that's going to have longer poor effects than a standard concussion would. Secondly, as much as I do like Rizzo, I think that his acquisition was more out of necessity rather than actually upgrading the team. He's obviously a fine player. He's a decorated MLB veteran and has the capability to do, to play at a fairly high level when he's playing his best, but he makes the Yankees less athletic. He was acquired as a lefty bat because the Yankees didn't have enough lefty bats, and then was signed to remain in New York because the Yankees didn't want to trade for Matt Olson or pay more for Freddie Freeman. So, like, I do have a little bit of resentment towards the Yankees front office for that. And it's unfortunate that, you know, it kind of has come out, you know, in my assessment of Rizzo. But again, like, even his 32 home run, 75 RBI season, like, a lot of that came in spurts for Rizzo, and that's more of what the Yankees don't need. They don't need hitters who randomly get hot and then go dormant and forget how to play baseball. And Rizzo is an aging player. He's not as athletic as he once was. This Yankees team, his defense is declining. I think that's objectively clear. The Yankees need to get younger. They need to get faster. They need more contact bats. And Rizzo doesn't suit them in many of those departments. So we have him for the next year. It is what it is. Any trade value that he might've possessed was lost because of this injury. So the most important thing now that we focus on is his health for, you know, life purposes. Want Anthony Rizzo to be healthy, like, no reason for him to have to experience this in the manner that he did. Again, don't really know who's at fault here. Like, I know he was misdiagnosed, but, like, as a player at some point, do you just say, I'm not playing anymore because I can't play? Can somebody fix this? Which has always been a problem with the Yankees, the communication aspect of injuries and things like that. Like, we've seen it with Luis Severino. Judge did it that one year when he had that diving catch and then suffered a collapsed lung. Like, the list goes on and on. So I don't know what the deal was. All I'm happy about now is that he's feeling better. He's hitting any semblance of major league pitching, which is all we needed to see, because he couldn't hit an ace last year. He couldn't hit the last guy out of the bullpen last year during those 2 months when he was unable to time pitches and actually see the ball clearly. So, look, I wrote over the weekend that he's among the players that are kind of fighting for, or who are in a contract year that are looking to, be motivated going out into the open market again. Like, he's not fully on a contract year, but he has that team option. If he doesn't perform well, he ain't getting that team option. That's $17 million. I think the Yankees would rather take the $6 million buyout at this point, because they already factored that into their finances with him making $20 million AAV. But a motivated Rizzo just doing what he did in 2022, hopefully a little bit more consistent. I would trade a little bit of the power for some more consistency. And this Yankees team's in a really good spot. So good for Rizzo. Glad he's feeling better. Makes me feel a lot more comfortable with where the roster is heading towards opening day.
Yeah, and again, like, say poo-poo the fact that, oh, you saw him hit 2 spring training home runs. You know how many home runs he hit after suffering the concussion last year in 2+ months? One. He homered on July 23rd. So, it's 2 spring training.
That late.
2 spring training home runs is more than we saw in 2 months of action last year after he suffered the initial concussive event. So, spring training performance and Juan Soto's, like, Soto has been a man on fire. But the fact that he's hitting spring training home runs does not lead me to believe that he's going to hit 65 this year or whatever. Yes. I'm not extrapolating those early bombs, although maybe he could. He's, like, pretty good. Maybe 65 home runs is in his future. But Rizzo hitting 2 is noteworthy because, again, he hit 1 off a randomly generated Royals pitcher in several months last year. So the level of competition argument doesn't really hold water either, because he hit his only home run last year off AI, basically. So this was extremely important and a big step. Number 2 question we've answered, and again, we don't have the official answer. We don't know who the pitchers are that are going to be taking the reins, but when Scott Efros got hurt specifically and when Wandy Peralta left in free agency, I was sort of like, I challenged the Yankees a little bit to say, hey, we know that you print bullpen arms. We know that you do that. That's your reputation. People say you have a strong bullpen, and at this point, though, it's teetering on becoming just some lip service that people pay without the facts backing it up. Like, as if people are saying the Lakers have a strong front court because of Shaq in 2003. Like, at a certain point, you can keep repeating, you know, these platitudes ad nauseum, but eventually you're just talking about 2019, like, with the brain drain and talent drain. Like, Chad Green leaves, Wandy leaves, Loaisiga can't really be counted on. Aroldis Chapman, love him or hate him, was certainly an important part of the bullpen. He's gone. So eventually you have to prove Efros isn't here. You have to prove that the Yankees have a good bullpen with a whole bunch of new names in tow. Like, they can't rest on their laurels from previous seasons. They have to prove that they can actually continue to print bullpen arms instead of just saying, ah, we print bullpen arms. It'll work itself out. Because eventually, the bullpen won't be good anymore if you don't keep replacing the talented arms that have left. Well, I don't know who it's going to be, but obviously the easiest prediction of all time was that someone who you never knew existed before February 15th was going to emerge as a key option for the New York Yankees this year. It's already Nick Birdie, who's throwing 100-plus miles an hour with devastating breaking stuff, who's had severe health concerns in the past. Who knows how long it's going to last, but odds are pretty high if he can make it to March 28th intact, he is going to make the opening day roster. So there's one. Cody Poteet, if you've seen him so far, has looked fantastic. Brian Cashman's going to learn his name eventually because he is going to play a role on this team. Cody Morris, one brilliant outing and then one bad one against the Orioles last week. But again, all I need to know is that the flashes are there. They can be harnessed. I would suspect we're going to see him as well. Ron Marinaccio, thanks, but no thanks. His Yankees career is veering dangerously close to being over. But that's three pitchers who might not have factored into most roster projections. And I would feel comfortable with two, if not all three, cracking the opening day roster right now. So I think the official answer is, do the Yankees still print bullpen arms? Yeah, I think that they do. And I think if we've already seen three emerge, we could easily see more over the course of the season. And that doesn't even include Will Warren and Clayton Beter and Luis Gil, who are clearly being used as starters right now. And a couple of them are still in big league camp, but they could be important bullpen pieces down the line as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm lobbying for Clayton Beter. Why not? That's a guy you want to get early exposure, I think, especially if the spring numbers are promising. I don't know what that would mean for like the roster flexibility. Did you mention all the people who were sent down? You did, right?
No, I didn't do the full slate.
I had the tweet here. What the fuck did I do? I'm an idiot. Well,
Heal was among them.
Heal Hampton. Yeah, it was. I got it right here. It was Heal, Bro, Ben Rice, Joey Gerber.
Yeah. Who was the
Is
only
that a real name?
Joey Gerber was the only pitcher maybe this whole spring training where I was like, that's not going to work. They had like a huge lead against the Jays and it was like bases loaded, bases still loaded, bases loaded and more runs have scored. They almost blew like a 10-1 lead to Toronto and it was him. And I wish him best of luck, but I definitely didn't watch the Joey Gerber outing being like, there's something here. It's like not a surprising first emotion.
Joey Gerber, baby. Sorry, bud. Luis Gil, Yoandrés Gomez, our guy Yogo, Hampton, and Art Warren. So obviously we know those guys will not be making the opening day roster, but yeah, I don't want to rush Clayton Beter, but I feel like his biggest problem has been his command. He's had a lot of walk issues, which haven't really changed this spring. He's walked 3 and 5 innings. So not terrible, but obviously, not the greatest. I like giving the young guys a shot. I feel like, what was the year Marinaccio got a shot? 2022, right?
Yes.
2022. He pitched well. And then his development got derailed by getting sent back down. And I think the Yankees need to learn from that. Like if you want to infuse the roster and have the right now, they have the avenue to welcome younger guys into the mix because they have the offense that's going to support a potentially ailing pitching staff. This Yankees team was horrible last year. It's the worst team that we've seen in our lifetime, right? Worst team that we've seen in our lifetime as 30 something year old Yankee fans. Like that offense scored just barely like what, over 3 runs a game. That's not happening this year. So they're going to be able to weather the storm here and there. Obviously you don't want the pitching staff overworked, but you look at a guy like Beter, they used him to start a game. They used him in relief. Like he could be one of the swing men and that could solve a big, big bullpen issue for them. I don't know. That's kind of where my vote lies. I'm done waiting to see how these, who mentioned it recently? It might've been Andy Martino or somebody saying that the Yankees love their prospects to conquer all levels of spring training. And it's like, fuck that, dude. Like what'd you see with Jason Dominguez? He very much did not conquer, what was it, double A. Spencer Jones very much did not conquer high A. Like some of these guys, their performance gets better when the stage gets bigger and they're challenged. Having, to me, having what, Clayton Beter pitch another 15 games at in shitty Scranton, that's not going to define his development. Like, at this point, his development has already been incredible. The Yankees got rid of Joey Gallo in 2022, brought in Clayton Beter, seemingly fixed his issues for the most part. No prospect is going to be with those past transgressions is going to come back looking absolutely perfect. Throw him in there, see what he could do. I mean, I want a younger team. I want as many young guys around this veteran core that we have, especially because a number of them will be gone by next year. Or at least we have to plan for that. So get all these guys in the room, let it happen. You know, Will Warren, I'd like to see him sooner rather than later too. Luis Gil is an interesting one. Like, if he's getting sent back down to minor league camp, I don't know if that generally bodes well for his entire season. It looks like he might just be rehabbing for more than half the year in the minor. So I don't know. My vote's Clayton Beter. I think that definitely, and I liked, I've been loving Nick Birdie's stuff. I love like a power arm out of the bullpen like that. And we saw him kind of stymie a couple of the Yankees hitters in live batting practice. So big fan of that. And you know, Cashman's boy, what did he call Cody Poteet?
Oh, Pete Petey.
He called him something really good.
I thought it was just Pete, and they're like, huh?
Cody Pete or just regular Pete? He was just
regular Pete. They're like, the guy who got from the Royals, and Pete. I'm like, what?
Pete and Pete, you know, the famous TV show from the 90s. Oh, so yeah, I mean, that's where I stand with the bullpen pieces, especially because like we're sitting here and like Luke Weaver starting the year in the bullpen too. So if you have two guys like Weaver and Beter in there, I know Cody Morris and Cody Poteet also profile as those guys. I want the youth, man. I want more youth, and I want the homegrown talent here. And I don't want players trying to continue to have to figure more and more things out in the minor leagues. Like, if you're proving that you're capable of handling spring training as that young of a player, after overcoming, you know, walk issues and control issues, like, that's enough for me. Just get it done. Sign the papers,
please. I mean, this is also ties into the third question, though, because now we know who gets the first starts when they need to go to the minor league depth, because I think a lot of people probably were erroneously penciling him in earlier in the offseason just because they were familiar with Luis Gil and they knew that, you know, oh, yeah, I mean, he was great when he got called up in 21. So now that he's not on the shelf with an elbow injury, he'll probably be one of those first guys up, or maybe he'll make the bullpen on opening day. That's not going to happen. He's clearly a little further down the pecking order, despite, again, getting the first start in spring training, which is usually an indicator like, oh, I guess that's, you know, hey, maybe they believe. No, it means nothing. It's just the guy who was available on that day and they didn't want to go to the rotation member. But Beter and Warren are still up in big league camp. Chase Hampton, unsurprisingly, demoted as well. He's probably going to start at Double A. But if you had high hopes for him being sort of first on that pecking order, diminish those hopes a little bit. Not going to happen. Heel, Yoendris Gomez, further down the depth ladder. At this point, it's Poteet and it's Beter and it's Warren who are going to be getting the first call, as well as Luke Weaver, who is presumably starting the regular season on the roster and will also be stretched out enough to cover three or four innings in a pinch. But if the Yankees suffer an injury where they are required to go deeper than that, and you know, it's going to be a longer term thing, and they have to summon someone from the minors who can cover 5-6 and be a starter instead of being a reliever masquerading as a starter, expect Beter, expect Warren, and expect Cody Poteet to get those shots. I would say that's pretty clear right now. But that leaves the lingering question that we have not answered yet. And I wish we'd answered it. It would be great if we had already answered this. But Carlos Rodon, spring training both doesn't matter at all and definitely matters. So we are in between answers on this one. You can't declare that Carlos Rodon is a problem in terms of being an issue for the Yankees. And you can't declare that Carlos Rodon is a problem, a la Bleacher Report's Twitter account in 2016, tweeting videos of middling NBA point guards. Rodon was supposedly at 97 miles an hour in his first bullpen sessions. He clearly is in better shape this spring than he was last spring. He reported camp early. Great start. The bullpen sessions where he's throwing 97, though, I wasn't there. I'm mostly hearing this from the insiders who were there. It's great that they have such a high, evaluation of Rodon early, but mostly happening behind closed doors, mostly reading about it, not seeing that, not seeing the velo jump. In his first spring training start, and currently only spring training start, looked very good, not great. The fastball was playing up in the way that it has when he is at his best. Got a couple of disgusting swings and misses at the slider. Experimented with a cutter, which he's been working with this offseason. That didn't go so great. Threw it a few times, peppered it in there, and then gave up a resounding home run to Alejandro Kirk on the cutter before coming out. Also lost his control mid-inning and regained it for the third out. Got the first two batters, walked the third, walked the fourth, hit the fifth on the foot, then got out of the second inning of work. Encouraging to an extent, but not dissimilar from what we saw last year from Rodon. He was peaking in the high 95s, 95.9 was what StatCast gave us. Also 93, 94, very, very good. And I don't need Rodon pumping 97 and 98 in his first spring training start. But since I didn't see it, I haven't answered that question yet. That's all we're saying. I'm not saying, oh, he didn't, so he can't. I'm just saying, wasn't hitting that 97 peak that we were told about, and so I can't definitively answer that question of whether the velocity is all the way back in game action. Then you get to the bullpen session and the batting practice session on Friday, which much consternation from everybody. He gave up four home runs in three innings of work to members of this minor league system. Ben Rice took him deep. Josh Bro took him deep. The recently demoted Yankees, people who are not going to make the opening day roster, all took him deep. Four minor leaguers in what amounted to a three-inning span. Not in-game work on the backfields. And look, does it matter? That's a complicated question. These results don't get attached to his permanent record. He could have been tinkering with that cutter for three full innings. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I would actually like somebody to clarify how many of these home runs came on cutters. That is, that is pertinent information that I would have liked somebody to ask who was there so that we could publish that. And no, right now I'm just speculating. Because all I know is the beat writer tweets and said he gave up four homers in three innings and then said something to the effect of, those guys are pretty good and they're all on our team, so I'd rather give up homers to them than some other guys. Funny deflection, but deeply concerning if the command has not returned. I was told the stuff looked better than last year, and last year's stuff, according to Stuff Plus, actually resonated pretty nicely with what he put up in 2022 and 2021 when he was a Cy Young contender. So the stuff wasn't even that much of a question last year. The question was location. And if he gives up four homers in three simulated innings, that would seem to indicate that something is wrong. Location-wise, physicality, the way he's feeling, that doesn't just happen. He's too good a pitcher to do that. So do spring training results matter? Not on the face. There are plenty of potential complicating factors here, but I don't know the details. Nobody colored in the picture for me. So just knowing he gave up four homers to minor leaguers in that short a span of time while working out the kinks, yes, it is deeply concerning to me. And I'm not ready. I'm not able to just write that off as spring training doesn't matter. Of course, spring training scores don't matter. If Juan Soto was over 20 this spring, nobody in their right mind would be writing that he lost the ability to hit. But somebody we needed to see a genuine leap from, and somebody whose genuine leap was advertised by beat writers, I would like to not find out that in the shadow of darkness, they allowed four home runs to minor leaguers in three innings of work. That's it. So that question is not answered yet.
Not answered. I also would like to know more about this, because spring training does matter for somebody like Carlos Rodon. Somebody who's looking to get their feet under them after having a disrupted offseason last year due to injury. Like you said, the stuff was there for Carlos Rodon, a little bit, minor velocity issues last year, but he had life on his pitches. The issue was the command. The issue was his health. The issue was, I think, mental, based on his behavior at certain points in the year that we've talked about a lot, what he did on the road against the Angels, what he did the last game in Kansas City with Matt Blake when he came out to the mound to visit him. Clearly he was bothered and heated by a lot of things, and as a competitor, that happens when you're not feeling yourself and you're not delivering upon what you felt like you're capable of. And Carlos Rodon had a trying season last year, and it's much like, you know, other guys coming back from injury or prospects with something to prove. Like, this is where spring training stats matter. You can't have a season like Carlos Rodon did last year and then come into spring training fully healthy this year, and then give up a barrage of homers to a bunch of players who have never seen the light of day in Major League Baseball. So you're right. I'm not ready to jump off a cliff because of this, but I do want to know more. The tongue-in-cheek comment, sure, it's better than him, I guess, flipping out and creating headlines for the wrong reasons. But there needs to be a greater explanation here. I will say, look, his first outing outside of the solo home run he gave up, like, looked really good. Even though the velocity wasn't at 97, like, there was life to his fastball. There was movement on his secondary pitches. He looked, last year to me, he looked stiff on the mound. It didn't seem like he was fully following through on his delivery, which probably took velocity off and took movement off and affected his extension. And that looks like it has changed this year. So that's all super positive. It's concerning, and we'll see what happens when he takes the mound when he takes him out again this spring. But it does make you wonder what if he is fully healthy, if he is tinkering with this other pitch, like the chronic back issue last year. Like, I'm still not letting that go, because there was no injury. They just said chronic back issue with no diagnosis, which made you believe that it could have been something mental. There was maybe something in his mechanics that affected his mobility. Like, I don't know. So until I can see Carlos Rodon take the mound for an extended period of time without reporting some sort of physical issue, I am maybe for the time being going to assume something might be wrong. If there is something as concerning as him giving up four home runs in a row, it was in a row, right? It was something crazy.
I don't think that's the thing. I don't know. Like, we don't know.
Let's find this out so people don't flip out.
I heard it was four home runs. They all went 845 feet, and they were pulled into the, they all hit the Tampa Bay Buccaneers workout facility across the street. And Tom Brady was wandering by just to say goodbye to his old friends and cohorts, and got drilled by Josh Bro's home run.
Yeah. Okay. So they were not all in a row. That's good. I guess here's my other question. Why didn't we talk about this earlier? Why was there a need for him to do a 52 pitch live batting practice instead of pitching another spring game?
Yeah. I mean, something to hide or something to work on. Like, those are the two things.
But why would you not want to work on, if the home runs are getting publicized at spring training, what the fuck does it matter if you're doing it against an opponent? Like,
well, I guess that's the question. Like, we are clued in, right? So we know he gave up a bunch of bombs in a private session, and we saw it, it on Yankees Twitter, and we saw it in a couple troll corners of non-Yankees Twitter. Did a Red Sox fan send it to me? Absolutely. But Brian Hoke's one tweet, I think, wouldn't get as much trolling exposure as Rodon giving up four bombs to the Red Sox or Rays in a regularly scheduled spring contest. And the evidence for that is, look at how many people are talking about the Gerrit Cole crap from the Vogelbach home run on Friday, because it's televised, because you can see it, because you can go back and break it down and go, actually, Vogelbach's typical home run trot is 19 seconds. So this wasn't even demonstrably long or whatnot. The Rodon homers happened under cover of darkness, so no one will ever see them. And he commented, you know, he worked on the cover. He said, I don't want to give up that many homers, but I'm glad I gave it up to our guys, make them feel good about themselves. Got to work in some curveballs and work on the cutter, so that was good. It would have been my preference to see him, if he's going to be pitching, I would rather him be doing strenuous pitching in game action instead of these long bullpen sessions, because I've been checking the MLB app trying to see, hey, that first Carlos Rodon start was pretty impressive, not, you know, without flaw, but I liked it. I wish he would have been taken out before he was allowed to give up that Kirk homer, but it was a cutter, and that's fine, and it's an experiment. I've been toggling in the app, like, when is the next Rodon starting? It's just not coming up. Today's Clark Schmidt. Tomorrow is a TBD, which
I don't like it. I really don't like
it. It's a whole bunch of TBDs, but the fact that he pitched in that off-site work seemingly indicated it'll be a while before his next start. You'd think, I mean, the bullpen session was Friday, so maybe Thursday against Detroit. That's a home game. Home game, slightly more favorable crowd. That feels right. But yeah, he pitched the second day of Yankee spring training action and hasn't pitched since then. We've already gotten to see Nestor Cortez appear, rest, bounce back, appear again. His stuff looks untouched from his 2022 season. Fireside Yankees put out a really helpful graphic today indicating that the pitch shaping, the spin, and all that stuff is pretty commensurate with what he was doing in 2022 when he was an all-star and a starting pitcher. And that was great, but I don't really have the same recovery data on Rodon because all I have is this one tweet that's all words, no visuals. It says he got rocked by a bunch of double-A guys.
Yeah, and what I don't get, he doesn't need to be protected. Like, he doesn't need to be shielded from anything. He is a longtime MLB veteran who's been through the ringer. He has dealt with poor performance on a large stage. He's dealt with much worse injuries than he suffered from last season. So, like, why does it seem like there's some sort of sheltering going on here with Carlos Rodon? Why do we have to wonder
about last year when he was terrible, right? He was terrible. He had a 6.85 ERA. What was his best start on the road at Fenway Park? Was the best start of the season. Second best start on the road at Pittsburgh, like a week after that. So even last year when he was getting eaten alive and blowing kisses to the fans in Anaheim and the end of the year and in Kansas City, the single worst start a Yankee has ever had, honestly, ever in an individual game. Even amidst all that, he was able to recover at various points of the season and get composed. And even in the Fenway game, he gave up a home run to the first batter he faced and then didn't allow another run. He was great in that game. So tough road crowd, Yankees Red Sox in September. I know we're entering March, so it's college basketball season. So we're doing the, hey, when these conference rivals play, throw out the records or whatever. You can do that with Yankees Red Sox too. The crowd shows up. I guarantee you the crowd was there in September. It was a doubleheader. It was the second game of that doubleheader, and they won because Anthony Misiewicz and Zach McAllister were really good in relief. It was a great game. But I guarantee the crowd was rocking. It was a weird Friday night. No, it was midweek. It wasn't Friday night, but night game at Fenway Park. Like, that's a hostile environment, and he handled it really well. So it's not like he needs to be coddled and isn't allowed to be used and deployed in road games and gotta, you know, only home spring training games for him. Can't go to Sarasota. Although veterans obviously do get the first choice of staying home versus traveling usually. Marcus Stroman is thrown on the road twice already, which is kind of like it doesn't make you go, what the hell's going on there? But yeah, Stroman recovered great in his second outing. I would like to see maybe Rodon recover as well.
I would too. I like Carlos Rodon. We advocated for this signing. We want it to work out. I don't know. I don't want there to be any. There needs to be fewer and fewer lingering questions with this Yankees team, with the Yankees in general, because far too often we're wondering what's happening. What's the deal with this? What's the deal with that? And then in 3 weeks, you're hit with some devastating news update where it's like, oh, I knew something was going on. Just couldn't figure out what it was because I'm not inside the Yankees organization, but I did know something was going on. At the very least, positively, forgot to add to the docket. I am loving Anthony Volpe's fucking swing change. I don't know about you. You wrote about it. I was watching it. I was doing weird things where I was just watching highlights the other night randomly.
You're a weird guy. Why did you do that?
Doing weird late night Twitter stuff. Before we get into blasting Blue Jays fans.
No, this is good. This is good. I don't want to do that much Blue Jays fan. I just feel like if we did the whole
podcast,
about the Blue Jays, we would be, but let's do this.
Yeah, Volpe, I thought a big problem with Volpe last year, and again, just an educated guess because I'm not a swing expert, but there was always just so much going on with his swing. The way that he kind of coiled himself, and he had a lot of movements going on before the pitcher released the ball, and I always feel like that is more of a distraction and gets more in your head because you have – so much to go through in the preparation stage before you actually swing the bat. And for a young player, that's even more difficult because obviously you have not mastered the mental aspect of the game. You're still developing. You're still trying to find your footing, figure out, you know, what your strengths, what your weaknesses are. There's a lot of growing pains to go through. And now it just seems like he is cutting and he's leveled his swing plane and he has far less, you know, movements that seem arbitrary in the pre-swing. So I'm loving it. And it seems like the results are pretty positive in the early going. Again, not gonna think Anthony Volpe is ready for an insane year two because he's shown some flashes of greatness with his swings early on in spring training. But I think this is a notable adjustment for this coming season because if he finally figured out his swing after the whole chicken parm thing, after watching enough film, you know, remember when this season ended, he was advised to, I think his dad advised him to rest. And he said, no, he's not. Yeah. And he just went back and dove in and kept training and was looking at film. So he put in the work, clearly a bit of a difference here. And I'm not checking it off. I'm not checking it off as a done deal, but you know, in a month from now, when, if he gets off to a hot start, the first week of the season, I will revisit this conversation because I do think that the early returns that we're seeing at this point are going to be something that we're going to be magnifying in a month or two from now.
Yeah, he looks a little bit too yoked, which is one where I'm just like, I don't know if that's, we'll see at the upper body work. But yeah, the spring is obviously different and it's a closer, people are saying, to what he operated under, the assumptions he operated under as a minor leaguer that led him to be a superstar prospect, that led him to the precipice of the majors last year to win everybody's hearts over in spring training. And the quote that stood out is, one AL scout who watched Volpe through his minor league development, this is Eric Boland, in 2023 in the majors and now this spring, said, quote, this is the guy I saw in the minors. I didn't recognize the guy at the plate last year trying to pull the ball 450 feet. Seems like he's getting back to who he is. To which I say, I hate to be the asshole, but who the fuck told him to do the opposite last year? And has that person been dismissed? Like, usually it's you doing the agitation and I'm trying to be measured, but like, is this a Dylan Lawson thing?
Is it?
Is this minor league hitting coordinator turned major league hitting coach Dylan Lawson, who said, Anthony, we love it. We've loved your rapid rise through the minors. You are one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. What if you hit 40 homers next year? Can you do that for me? You've never done it before, but let's just try to jack everything to left center. Because as we all know, it's been an enduring message that's been spread throughout baseball over the centuries. Power comes easiest if you really try hard for it. It's the exact opposite. You're supposed to homer if you're not seeking power, and then you maybe do get that quality contact and drive the ball. It's the literal opposite. So anybody who watched Volpe last year knows he was seeking out uppercuts, trying to play to the porch, but more importantly, trying to pull home runs into left center and left field. That was the craziest thing. He wasn't even trying to serve porch jobs. He hit that one late against Toronto in a game that they blew the save and then won anyway, but didn't win on his home run. And then he had that one late in the season in Detroit when he tied the game in the ninth, but then Gleyber Torres did something weird, threw the ball away in extras, and they lost. But most of his notable home runs were hit either to left center or left field. Because he was seeking that. And 2020 is great, but like we've written, it was the worst 2020 season ever. It was well below league average in terms of the actual offensive output, and the stolen bases slowed down the pacing significantly after the start of the season. So new Volpe, not just impressive, but much needed. He could not have continued on the way he played last year. And it definitely made me question him as a sure thing entering this year. Wasn't writing him off, but was definitely saying, I don't know if I can count on him to have a big year too. When just last year I was like, he might be the savior. He might be the next homegrown megastar. I had more faith in him than Jason Dominguez. And then after what I saw last year, I definitely had less faith in him than Jason Dominguez. So big of him to get off to a start like this and still has that speed, still has that ability, defensive ability, still has that range, the instincts most importantly. And now that he's lashing singles and doubles in the gap and legging out triples and taking advantage of defenders' mistakes when they're trying to rush to get him because they know he's fast enough to turn that corner and burn in a second, I like that version of Volpe a lot more than the one we saw last year. And look, he's still going to hit 15 homers.
Yeah.
The difference is going to be 5 home runs. And then when he rounds into comfort, he might end up hitting 25 to 30. That might be the guy we see, but he's not selling out for power. And that's really important. Now, do you want the first crack of the Blue Jays?
No.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'll take it, but I don't need it.
I can take it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sick of these people. It's embarrassing at this point. Like Keith McPherson was on the podcast last week. And, you know, we always wonder how other Yankee fans feel about other fan bases and other teams. And for a while, like we just never really considered the Blue Jays anything. Like They've never disrupted us ever. They've only choked against us in the biggest moments possible. But someone called me out, which is the craziest thing ever, because we were talking about World Series droughts and postseason success over a long stretch of time. So obviously, if I'm talking about some team's World Series and playoff struggles, we'll talk about the Yankees. The Yankees have not won a World Series dating back 15 years. 15 years it's been. So we're going to highlight the fact that it's been 15 years. They haven't even been to a World Series in 15 years.
And they're in the playoffs all the time. So it's a lot of playoff failures, not just regular season failures.
Exactly. So, of course, I talk about the Blue Jays World Series drought and the Blue Jays postseason futility over the span that they've been irrelevant, which is since 1994. And some Blue Jays fan called me out and said, "Oh, convenient of you to leave out 92 and 93. Yeah, of course it was convenient. We're talking about playoff futility and droughts, not the last time you mattered. And even if I did focus on that, it was 30 years ago. It was double the amount of time that the Yankees had been, you know, struggling with their World Series absences and everything like that. So I don't even know how, like, this is what's wrong with these people. They're calling me out because I left out their 1993 success in an article where I was highlighting how bad they are. And now we have Blue Jays fans at it again, dude. Garrett Cole has a very valid quote after the game. Sure. You know what? At the end of the day, don't give a fucking home run up to Daniel Vogelback.
Sure.
Don't do it. Don't give up a home run to a minor leaguer in the preseason. Don't mislocate a fastball. But guess what? Garrett Cole's game is, if you beat him on the fastball, you're probably hitting a home run. It's a well-documented thing. So for Blue Jays fans to be calling Garrett Cole a baby because he didn't like Daniel Vogelback literally walking around the bases and like giving the third base coach a massive high five and like fist bumping a bunch of his teammates when he crossed home plate, it's like, yeah, it's February, dude. Nobody cares. What are you doing? And I'm glad he said something like that to set the tone for the start of the season. You know what? On the flip side, I'm sure if Kevin Gausman was being a bitch about it, I'd have something to say. But, I mean, Vogelback's trot was clearly, like, meant to agitate. That is not, like, that's not a normal home run trot by any means. And Gerrit Cole has, you know, the first inning of the spring game. He wants the game to move on, like cross home plate. Let's go. This is a warm up. This is nothing more than a warm up. I'm not getting my feelings hurt because a minor leaguer hit a home run off me after I mislocated a fastball, and Blue Jays social media going off, making fun of the Yankees, calling them babies, whatever. When again, what was the last meaningful thing that you have done to actually have any leverage over the Yankees fan base or the Yankees organization in general? The answer is nothing. It's literally nothing.
So what did Gerrit Cole say, right? Because the reaction to the quote is not accurately tied to what the quote was. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Shocker. It was exaggerated for effect. The way that the quote has been handled by Blue Jay, Gerrit Cole's quote was they asked him about the Vogelbach trot and the Vogelbach preen out of the box in a game that doesn't count on March 1st. And his response to a question that got asked was, what is it, February, March? Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know about that. And then follow up, like, what are you thinking? He said, you know, I don't forget a lot of stuff. Sure. Second half of that quote, you would tell me it was an absolutely badass display of a pitcher asserting his dominance on the mound. If it was Gossman, Pedro Martinez, Bob Gibson, any great ace from history who's like, I don't forget in a spring training game, would sort of be like the ultimate embodiment of a pitcher owning his territory. A famous Bob Gibson story is he once gave up a long home run to somebody right before his retirement, and then in an old-timers game 15 years later, hit that guy. And that's shared as like, oh man, Bob Gibson really didn't forget. Like, he was always on. He held grudges. But Gerrit Cole says, I wish somebody wasn't moonwalking around the bases against me during spring training, and all of a sudden, he's a baby instead of one of the game's great, you know, denizens of protectors of the mound or whatever, which is what you would have said about anybody else. I'm not fooling myself. I know that's because he's on the Yankees. I know it. He's got a reputation for being soft. Why? Because he struggled at Fenway Park in a one-game playoff on a bum hamstring and then went out and won the Cy Young last year and was dominant in the playoffs for Houston in 2019 as well.
But your ass all year.
Didn't pitch in Game 7 of the World Series. Like, one run in 28 and a third innings last year against Toronto. Obviously, you're going to call a Yankee soft all the time, but Gerrit Cole usually handles his business and then taunts the other team. The Mariners last year, Jose Caballero. He took offense to Jose Caballero stepping in and out of the box, so he whiffed him, and then he finger-pointed at him. Is it soft to take care of your business? I didn't think so. Look, some Blue Jays fans probably going to clip this and say doing a 10-minute podcast segment on this is soft. That's right. You can do that. But that's the worst part about being a Yankee fan, and it comes with the territory. Spring training does not matter at all. At all. But God forbid a Yankee struggle or say something a little funky, because it's going to be treated like the biggest deal in the world. Cole, of course, getting roasted. And you're right. The fact that, look, if Gossman said this, we would go after him. Kevin Gossman did say this. He still hadn't gotten over Aaron Judge's side eye in the game where he cheated. Oh, yeah. Maybe he knew it was coming. Maybe the third base coach was out of the box. After that series, Gossman was still on the record saying, hey, I still feel like we got something taken away from us. What? One game with no proof? Are you kidding me? And then Gossman also complained on the record when they were switching out the Aaron Judge baseballs, when he was chasing the home run record and they would take some time at the start of his at-bat to bring in specially marked baseballs in case he homered. Kevin Gossman was on record saying, I'm not used to that kind of interruption. So he's complained about the tiniest little pinpricks during the regular season. But Gerrit Cole can't complain about this slow home run trot. And you're right. Everybody knows the answer is don't give up a giant bomb, right? Correct. Do not give up a huge home run if you don't want to get styled on. But have we really tripped so far past the point of just endorsing all celebration and individual freedom where we think the pitcher now has to like it too? Like, obviously, let the kids play. Yes. Batters who homer should celebrate. Pitchers who strike batters out should celebrate as well. Mostly during regular season games. But yes, they should do it. Exhibition game, if you feel the need to celebrate off Gerrit Cole, if you feel the need to slow walk around the bases to assert your dominance, if you're Daniel Vogelbach, go ahead and do it. You can do it. But does Gerrit Cole have to love it? Does Gerrit Cole have to, if they ask him in the postgame, hey, did you see Vogelbach's home run trot? It's a little slow there. What'd you feel about that? does he have to go, oh, I forgot to thank him. That's right. I was going to go shake his hand for doing such a cool celebration on me in a nice slow home run trot. That's my bad. I forgot to salute Daniel Vogelback on being his truest self and living out his individual freedom on the base paths. No, he should be allowed to say, what is it? Was it Marsh? That didn't impress me. Well, we'll see him again. We'll see him again down the line. That's akin to what he said. Those are my words. Would that have made it any better? No, he would have still gotten ripped for being too soft, for mentioning it at all. Even though, again, he was asked a question. It wasn't a WWE promo. He didn't grab the mic at a press conference and be like, before you ask me about my outing, let me just tell you one thing. Daniel Vogelback, you're a showboating son of a bitch. Like, that is not what happened. Somebody asked him, what do you feel about this? And he said, here's what I feel about it. I did not love it. That's what happened. That's all that happened. And it's gotten to the point with Blue Jays fans where they think they matter so much in this rivalry. I actually hate Blue Jays fans more than Red Sox fans. But when the Blue Jays play the Red Sox, I still want the Blue Jays to win. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I'm at. Blue Jays, Red Sox battling in a battle for a wild card spot. Go Jays. I don't mind it. I hope the Jays knock the Red Sox out of the playoffs. Actually interacting with either fan base, give me Red Sox fans 7 days of the week.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy, like the TikToks and the viral, like anybody that the Blue Jays fan should be the exact example on why and how social media has gotten so bad, where everybody does not deserve to have their opinion magnified and put out in the world. That's where if we were to bring this to a larger forum and have to plead our case to be like, hey, maybe you should have to be approved on social media by, you know, some phantom board that determines your viewpoint actually worthwhile or helpful to the discourse. Here are Blue Jays fans' opinions. And then you go through all this stuff and they're like, these people are not allowed in here. We're not letting them on this platform.
You can't have social media accounts.
Yeah. That'll be the next frontier of social media, which, you know, I'll hope to, we'll hope to drive that forward. But yeah, and even going back, like Gerrit Cole was asked a question, right? He says something about it. Kevin Gausman is king crybaby. He says stuff unprompted all the time. What was the year he complained about not winning the Cy Young and he had inferior stats? I don't remember what year it was, but I think it was
last year when he finished third?
When he finished third and he complained. He complained about like not getting top 10 on like Bleacher's pitcher rankings, which never fucking matter because it's Bleacher Report. It's not major. It's not MLB Network. But then there was another, maybe it was this past year. It feels like it was longer ago, but like every single number that he had was inferior to a majority of the people ahead of him. And he was like, I think he led the league in strikeouts last year. And he thought like that should have been the defining quality of who won the Cy Young when he trailed Gerrit Cole in every other metric that goes into the voting process here. So, I mean, Blue Jays fans really want to come after, I know there's a history with Manoa and the trash talking, the Audi sign, whatever. Something I've forgotten about because it doesn't matter. And it wasn't really embarrassing. And it was just a moment that holds no weight for me. It's still like everything that Blue Jays fans swear by, and they're like, well, pull out that receipt. Cause remember when Gerrit Cole was talking trash to Alek Manoah? Yeah. I mean, sure. I guess who is Alek Manoah anymore? I don't know. Seems to be not a major league baseball player. So what does this matter anymore?
No, it doesn't.
You're a group of people.
Yeah. If Vogelback didn't start it, also the Yankees won that game. Like so if spring training matters to you. Okay, great. You guys lost pretty significantly. but yeah, I guess we should do some more of those, you know, great, TikTok pieces of content creation. We should do more of those. The TikToks where somebody's in the deep corner going, baseball action happened this weekend and it was absolutely crazy. Just pointing at a picture in the background. Cause those are great. Everybody should do, we should all do more of those. Yeah. Kevin Gausman.
Can you believe it's always like this, like a floating head and like the thing on. So can you believe this fucking asshole? Like pointing this son of a bitch.
Yeah.
What a bitch. And it's like, it's not even, it's like if you're a sports content creator, how in the world, again, the only exception is Jared Kravis. How in the world do you think that like you're going to improve your plat by like floating head? This freaking asshole. What the fuck are people doing?
Kravis shouldn't even be an exception though. He's just the one that we accept because we're like, oh, it already happened. He's already extremely famous. Like, I don't know. I don't think that somehow he's in with the Boston Red Sox. He rides around in the parade floats, and that's great.
Whatever. Cool.
Making his living that way. Yeah. Anyway, good job for the Yankees Toronto rivalry this year. And I don't think Gerrit Cole will forget it, by the way. So you're all like, oh, he's saying he won't forget it. The game doesn't even count. he's not going to forget it. So, you know, the game doesn't count. And Vogelbeck, he's free to do whatever he wants, but Gerrit Cole doesn't have to love it. That's it. I don't care. Yeah. Somebody also was coming at me over the weekend being like, it's loser energy for Cole to be saying that. I don't think it's awesome guy energy, but it's his opinion. I'm not like everyone.
But he was asked about.
Everyone should complain all the time. I don't think it's a winning mentality. But again, what have we said about the game's great aces for the last 70 years? That they don't let any slight slide. They do have a long memory, right? It's an exhibition game, spring training. George Steinbrenner used to be like, don't let the Mets beat us in spring training. Everyone in society knows that doesn't matter, but he was wired like a wild man where he was just like, I can't lose a spring training game to the Mets. I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to absolutely lose my mind because they share the same city with us. And if we lose a spring training game to the Mets, it sets the wrong tone. And so he had advisors to be like, George, it's okay. It's okay. Let's focus on the regular season. But he was a winner, and he was somebody who won at all costs. And in the cost of having a brain like that is that sometimes you can't tolerate some insignificant slights like the Mets winning a spring training exhibition. So that's Gerrit Cole. He is a competitor. It's, in fact, the opposite of soft for him to be like, we're pimping home runs in spring training? All right. I see ya. I remember that. Yeah. We'll have that up here for a while. And so that maybe he gets, if Vogelbach cracks a big league roster at some point this year, maybe Gerrit Cole will see him. Maybe he'll have to go down to AAA Buffalo to get a second opportunity at Daniel Vogelbach. I don't know how the season's going to play out.
This asshole, how about don't give a home run up to a minor league player, you bitch? Okay.
Flip that. That's good stuff. What is that, 20 seconds? That's good content. You can kick your feet up for the rest of the week. You did it. You did your job. Good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us live here on the Yanks Go Yarn podcast. Sorry to anyone we offended by calling a bitch. Thanks for joining us. And again, join us on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify. Those are the two main ones.
Bye, Google.
If you've heard of other podcast platforms, feel free to float them to us. We're probably there as well. You might have found us on those podcast platforms. But we're here every Monday, Thursday, 2:00 Eastern. Thanks for joining us, the folks who did. If you want to leave us a review, we would love it. 5 stars helps a lot. The comments are already popping off asking where they can possibly find both myself and Thomas Chiarinante on social media. At Adam Weinrub is my handle. That's on Twitter. Again, why would I call it X? I'm not going to do that. Thomas Chiarinante, where can the people find you?
At Tommy's_takes. The both of us are at the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account. That is at Yanks Go Yard FS. If you frequent the World Wide Web at all, which you would if you're going to Twitter, head on over to yanksgoyard.com. That's where all of our bylines are. A lot of content. We're prepping you guys for opening day, keeping you up to date on all the spring training developments. We got some fun articles you guys have been reading, so we appreciate the support. Once again, thanks for tuning in today as well. Anything else you guys got, you know, sound off in the comments, please. Hit us up, DM us, whatever works. We want you guys here for the long haul. We want to be hanging out as much as we can during the season. It's going to be a big year. So thanks again for all the support. We will see you guys Thursday live on YouTube right here, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Same time, same channel. Don't count us out. I promised we were going to be here at the same time on the same channel doing a podcast. I have a long memory. I don't forget when my podcast is. So we'll see you then.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.